I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy, and this is Roberta's Pizza. So today's show is going to be about Lucky Peach Magazine, the new food quarterly from Momofuku's David Chang. We have a guest who is not quite here yet. He is the editor-in-chief of that and a great food writer all around. He co-wrote the Momofuku cookbooks. His name is Peter Meehan, and let's hope he shows up. But in the meantime, hopefully we can reschedule him. And we've got Darren Bresnitz on air who's
Hello.
Hanging out. Thanks so much for jumping in.
Of course. Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
So Darren runs Snacky Tunes, the show that's on next. And, you know, we are looking at these magazines, Lucky Peach. They just started last, I believe, fall. And then, winter.
Last summer.
Summer. Yeah, there's summer, whatever. And then the first issue is all about ramen, which is makes perfect sense. It is a quarterly, and it's not your average magazine. There's no, you know, breaking news. There's travel stories. There's a history about the guy who invented instant ramen, Momofuku Endo. And the second issue is another theme that is a little more abstract. It's called The Sweet Spot. Darren, what do you think? How do you like these magazines?
Well, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I really am happy to see this type of journalism coming out in the food world. So much of the food magazines that are out there are very precious.
Yeah.
And this is sort of the antithesis of precious, if
right.
you will. It's very gritty. It's very raw. Lots of dead animals. I think Anthony Bourdain talks about Roadhouse, the movie, in the second issue.
It's risque.
It's risque. And it's covering, beyond that, it's just covering content that isn't being covered in printed fashion. I think you get a lot of this on blogs, but not mm-hmm. so much in a tangible.
Yeah, that's a good point. You said like blogs. It is kind of like a blog because it has a very unique perspective. And let's not forget, it's all pretty much funded by the Momofuku Restaurant Group.
It's great.
It's a personal thing.
I mean, any time that I can hold a photo, something that Christina Tosi made each month makes me a very happy man.
The dessert chef at Milk
yeah.
Bar.
So, you know, beyond, I think there's that's the first part that makes it exciting. And the second part is the iPad app or the that goes along with it.
Oh, I don't have that. Yes.
I don't have an iPad but it's the idea of launching a new type of magazine that is both a nod to the
right.
printed medium, but then also recognizing the importance of having an interactive component, which is great because it adds video, it adds texture, it adds substance. And I'm pretty sure 0.0.
Okay. Yeah.
Anthony Bourdain's mm-hmm. and production, the people he does the layover with, I think they did a lot of the video content.
Mm-hmm. And I in the first issue, that in the introduction, Peter explains, who I'm going to kill, by the way.
It's fine. Look,
he explains that this idea with Lucky Peach first started out as a TV show that he and David Chang wanted
yes.
to do, and then maybe an app, and then it's really funny how it went full circle to like the most archaic, I guess, of mediums, which is a print magazine.
Well, I think in those three types of mediums,
something
people,
that you can jump.
People yeah. still love magazines.
Yeah,
I don't know anybody who really collect. I guess it's different. I guess people do collect TV shows now. Now they can buy DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, how many cooking magazines do you have at home?
None.
Okay. Well, that question fell flat. I mean, I think it's really great. There's something about having the magazine.
I have edibles. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh yes. I think you have to. I think yeah. they'd kick you out of Brooklyn if you didn't have edible
you
Brooklyn.
Don't have edibles.
But you know, something about the trends that are going on. It's really great. Even in a Savoir and Bon Appetit and Gourmet, I think it moves a little bit slower pace, but you can see the trends if you have it for a few years, both photography and recipes and even the advertisements and I guess even, you know, and it's also great to look at what events are being placed in there as well, you know, to really see the rise of, you know, it used to be South Beach, now it's Cayman Islands, now it's, you know, it's Aspen, right. It's all the stuff. And this is just, this is a really great addendum. I don't think it's a magazine for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't.
And it probably won't be, but there should be more magazines that aren't for everyone. Like, there should be books and TV shows that aren't so mass that, you know, it's a niche thing and it hits on these things like that you could never talk, like the dead fish and, you know, stuff like that. You mentioned advertising, and this, it's funny because the first issue does not have any ads.
No, they did not.
And then the second one has a couple ads or something.
Yes. You know, I think the... I can't remember if they came out and they were like, we're not going to do ads, but I think they fell into the same area as Mad Magazine at some point where you just have to have ads.
Yeah.
And a few. And I don't think people care as much. And those that really would raise a stink about advertising, as long as the advertising doesn't affect the content.
Exactly. And I think that that's one difference because a lot of advertisers have requirements. Like, you cannot talk about something too risque and... we don't want to be associated. We don't want to have our ad in this magazine if you talk about, I don't know, what, something horrible. We'll think of another example later. But on the other hand...
Well, I mean, you're looking... It's really funny. They have two, both the covers, the first
dead,
and the second
dead
one.
Animals,
dead animals.
Which is one of the questions I wanted to ask Peter. Is every issue going to have a dead animal on the cover? But anyway, this in this case, though... There is an issue, I think, of that, like, something controlling, silently controlling the hand, something controlling the content, that is, which is the fact that, like, let's face it, you can't say a negative article about David Chang.
Oh, in this?
Yeah.
I think if anyone was to write a negative article about David Chang and Lucky Peach, it would be David Chang.
Yeah.
I think there is...
You know what I mean? It's like they are the hand controlling content.
Well, of course, but, you know, unless I'm misunderstood, no one, you're never going to find an article on Bon Appetit that's negative against Bon Appetit.
Yeah, but they are supposed to be kind of unbiased when it comes to food.
Who? Bon Appetit?
Bon Appetit.
Oh, I don't think that's true
okay.
at all. I mean, I it's tough because, you know, are these type of magazines considered journalism? You know, is this...
I think that most people would think the other food magazines, Bon Appetit and so forth, are considered journalism. You should follow those kind of integrity, whatever, journalistic integrity okay. laws. But this one, it's more like art magazine. So, but true. Then there's a fine line. So some people think it's a food magazine.
I'm sure they... And again, you know, you'd have to ask Mr. Meehan. But...
Dang it, where are you?
But I would say that I'm sure that anytime they write an article, it gets fact-checked at some level. I'm sure all the recipes are tested.
Well, fact-checking is one thing, but, you know, the ideas that, you know, the board meetings, let's what to put in this magazine. You know, it's just like any editor-in-chief, like, has some
Well, yes, I mean, it's just like, this definitely falls into the more... You know, it's more likened to less of a Bon Appetit and Gourmet, more like a very niche music type of magazine where it really is one or two people's visions and thesis and statements about that. And of course, what's going to get filtered through that is just right. always going back yeah. to that thesis.
I mean, we brought up Edible Brooklyn.
Yes.
That definitely has a thesis, which is to champion our local food.
Right, and of course.
And fairly, you know, evenly, hopefully, those they believe are deserving. But the whole goal of it is to showcase and celebrate Brooklyn food
right.
and artisans and stuff.
But they definitely have their own agenda.
Mm-hmm. Which is that, right?
Which is that. And, I mean, if you don't see a lot... I mean, I actually can't think of any other restaurant brand that has a magazine, so I don't even know
exactly.
who to compare
yeah.
it to.
I feel like this is a very interesting development because we will see a lot more of these because print journalism is hard to make viable. Gourmet Folded, we all know all about that. People
yeah.
are saying print is dead, whatever. But how do you make it viable? And it used to be ads, and now this, you know, now it's going to have to...
Well, it's funny you bring up ads because Christina Tosi is in one of the ads for...
Well, is it an ad? Yeah.
Yeah, that is okay. Breville for the mixer. And it, but I mean, it's very organic, but this is also blurring the line a lot.
I know.
Because this is their presenter of her book tour, and I have no idea if they paid for the ad in the magazine. But
yeah, who is getting benefit? It's hard to tell because she gets exposure, which is part of the Momofuku restaurant group. Breville gets exposure. It's like, it's all, yeah, like you were saying, it's kind of organic. Interesting.
You know, it's, someone was telling me this joke the other day that David Cross made about trying to pay his electric bill with scene cred. And it's sort of what it comes down to. I mean, it's how much do you want to judge an event like this where these guys are really putting themselves out there? There's a lot of reason why restaurant tours or things like that don't do magazines like this, because one, it distracts from the restaurant, and two, you know, a lot of them don't have the same personality as David Chang. I mean, David Chang is like a really rare mm-hmm. type of guy. He yeah. really is a personality more than almost any other person, and he has the Empire to back it up. And I think I see your special guest watching
yes!
right now.
Peter Mahan is in the station. Anyway, now, you know, it brings up another story about the advertisers and the blurred line between journalism and maybe marketing. Do you remember Guilt Taste?
Of course.
When that came out?
Is it still going
there's
on?
A lot of, yeah, I think so. And there's a lot of talk about how, oh, now we can't tell if this is journalism or...
Oh, that's
or,
commerce.
Or what? Or commerce or e-com. Hey there, sir. So Peter is in a band, so maybe he was up all night playing with Spectre Folk, his rock band. Oh, I said 1:30? Apparently I said 1:30 to Peter and I was wrong. Sorry about that.
It's all right. I've been keeping the microphone warm for you.
So you could pull up that mic right here. We were just talking about Lucky Peach. And first of all, you are the editor-in-chief.
I am the editor. We made Chris Ying the editor-in-chief.
All right.
Who's our buddy at McSweeney's, who we do the magazine with.
Cool. But you've been championing, you've been behind the conception and everything.
Yeah.
It's your baby.
It's kind of, yeah. I have a little baby, but it's my other baby. And I actually brought, this is the new.
Oh, the new one.
Yeah. It's the.
We wanted to know what's the, because the first theme is ramen, the second one is the sweet spot, and this one, issue 3, will be.
Cooks and chefs.
Hmm.
So it's like a. You know,
you just like handed me a marked up manuscript. That's awesome.
That's as close as I've got to a finished copy. We finished it yesterday.
That's amazing. Will the cover be another dead animal?
The cover is another dead animal. It is a pig leg getting tattooed with a human cut into sections.
Wow.
Love it.
So now we've had a dead chicken
Damien
and a dead
Hirst.
Fish. And we actually have Sarah Lucas, who's part of that. Damien Hirst okay. scene in the magazine.
Is she the one who did the tattoos on the pigs that he turned into sculptures?
No, she is another one of those young British artists who does, you know, kind of yeah. the installation stuff. But she and Fergus Henderson did a story for us for this issue. So
cool.
Cooks and Chefs, it's kind of a, you know, chefy circle jerk of an issue.
I mean, excellent you guys always work. Really do get the hippest and coolest chefs all over the world.
It's, we try.
It sounds like I love the article in the first one that has just the speech bubbles around the chefs, Anthony Bourdain, Wiley Dufresne, and Dave Chang.
Yeah, that was...
That's so fun.
That was... you know, that's the great thing about working with the guys at McSweeney's is you know, we've got this transcript of a conversation that Ying and I edited down into something somewhat readable.
Mm-hmm.
But then they, you know, found inspiration in... Brazilian photo novellas, which I guess was like a thing happening in Brazil in the 1970s. These mm-hmm. crazy, crazy design with huge heads on every page talking. And that was kind of the inspiration for that one. So
sweet.
It's good to have, you know, people who you can hand a jumbled mess to and be like, can you make this pretty? And then
yes.
they do, you know, that's
the
magic.
You guys had a vision and they executed it. Excellent. Well, what was I going to say? I guess you answered, whatever. How do I get to write for Lucky Peach?
We just talk about it over pizza.
Okay, good.
That was actually how Mario Batali, he did a big story for this new issue, and it was kind of like, he emailed. He's like, so what do I have to do?
Mm.
And I'm like, you asked. All right, let's do it.
It's awesome.
I have this idea about, like, a story about making food for my dogs.
making food. Oh, because you guys have like the whole dog thing going on.
Yeah, we have a couple dogs, and
You've got the dog charity thing going on.
Yeah, we have a Humane Society charity thing coming up March 31st. But sometimes I just reach into my freezer and I find like leftover entrails from a whole animal that I had, and then I mix it up and cook some veggies and some grains. And it's crazy.
Yeah, how into dog nutrition are you? Because I have friends who cook for their dogs.
I'm terrible.
I'm terrible.
And I have a friend who I work with who's our culinary producer, and he will only cook for his dogs. Like, he gives them no bag food, no nothing.
I read about this in the Times, too.
Yeah.
A while ago.
Yeah, my dog never took to cooking very well, but he never took to me either. So it was kind of 10 years of... unrequited, you know.
Well, he never took to never cooked himself.
No, he never took to me as his owner. Okay. I was doing the math towards the end of his days, and I'm like, we've been on like 30,000 walks together, and you still don't like me.
I have a dog, and we just celebrated a 1 year anniversary, and I'm still sort of like, I don't know if you really like me.
That's isn't that part of the deal? Unbridled affection.
That's
If I wanted a challenge, I could have gotten another human in my house.
I could have gotten a cat.
Yeah,
I could understand the indifference.
There was a Onion headline once that put me off of getting cats ever again. I grew up with cats, and it was, "Do you want a box of shit in your house? Get a cat." And I was like, "Oh, that's such a good point." But dogs, I don't know. There's, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
See, isn't this such good substance for a Lucky Peach story? I don't know.
We were talking about something before you came in about the whole business model of how, I think you said, started as a show, then went to an app, and then now it's a magazine, but it's also being funded partly by the whole. How does the breakdown work
of the business of
Lucky Peach? Because no other brand is doing what you're doing that started as a restaurant.
Well, I feel like this
Diner Journal, is that an example?
Diner
Journal.
Yeah, they've got the.
Oh, Marlon.
They have a quarterly that's really handsome. I think it's a quarterly. It comes out kind of like ours a little bit irregularly. We started out trying to make a television show, and we were going to put it out in an app, and that is still in this strange quagmire limbo zone. But when we were starting out on that, Ying from McSweeney's, who is a buddy of mine, you know, he was just like, well, let's do a magazine. And it seemed so dumb to everyone involved, but I was like, I'll take care of it. I'll just do it with Ying, and it'll be this little thing. And then the app and TV show never has not come to term yet. And the magazine came out, and then it was successful. I mean, we printed like 30,000 copies of the first issue, and you know, we're hoping to sell like half of them to like make our money back. And we ended up selling 72,000 copies of it, and then
we're
doing more and more for each issue. So it's growing, and you know, it's found an audience, and that's what's enabled it to continue to happen. So
it's self-sufficient.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Are you going to keep doing ads? Because I noticed in the second one that you mentioned in the intro, there's a couple ads because we like these guys.
I would take ads from people I don't like. Dave Chang seems to have quibbles with that. He's like, no, we can't take money from those people. I'm like, but their money, we can spend it. So yeah, we are trying to sell ads, but we are very bad at selling ads.
Okay.
Because
that's something that you might just do more of.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, we're hoping like, maybe to get 6 ads in an issue, so it's still like 30 pages of stories to one ad, so it's not like an intrusion, but it would be good because it would make it more self-sufficient.
It would make it easy.
And it would give us money to send people to do stupid things.
No one has problems when they play ads between television shows that they like.
No, except that we get to just take them off the internet now and watch them without ads.
That's very true.
But yeah, I mean, advertising is something we're interested in getting more of, but it's difficult also because we don't have like a demographic. We're not trying to reach any particular audience. Okay. And I think for advertisers, they're more used to, you know, buying what they feel like will be a certain demographic that they can reach, and we're like, we don't know, people buy it.
But don't you guys have a bit of a thesis of a certain type of genre that really isn't being?
I think so.
Savor, right? You have, I would say, of all the big names, you overlap a little bit with Savor because they're a little bit hipper. But no one is really covering what you're doing or putting dead animals on the cover, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different. You know, I think it does have a space of its own in the pantheon of food magazines that are out there. But, you know, those magazines are run by real media companies that know how to tell advertisers things that make them want to give them money. And we're like, it's cool, that's dudes, come on, goal. You should put an ad in. And it, I guess that doesn't work. I was surprised. I thought that people would be like, oh, it's cool, we'll buy an ad. But
I think
you need more than that.
Like,
I think we need like a
high school literary journal. We would do the same thing. We're not sure.
I think I need to get into PowerPoint and then we can, you
I think
know,
you,
sell
you
some
should
ads.
Be able to sell advertising on coolness in like the early 90s and the early 2000s. And then once the bubble burst, people are like, I want a return on my investment.
Yeah, I think we can sell more ads and we will try to sell more mm-hmm. ads. But if we don't, luckily, like through subscribers and single issue sales, like it's staying afloat.
Okay, cool.
But if we get advertisers, we can go and do stupid things and spend all of that money, you know, going somewhere ridiculous, which is, you know, I just mm-hmm. want it to fund some sort of fantasy lifestyle that I don't have yet.
Well, what are you most looking forward to exposing or just writing about creatively in future?
You know, I think for me, like the thing that keeps it interesting and fun is the chance to give people assignments that they want and give them the space to do the stories that they want to do. I mean, that's always a struggle when you're like a freelance writer, mm-hmm. you know, is like, I know when I worked at the Times, there were so many stories I wanted to write that I could never get traction to do. So there's real joy for me in being able to.
That's why you got to start a blog, Peter.
I've tried. I started a Tumblr and I posted on it twice. Me and the internet, I don't know, there's something about
you don't get paid for it also.
But it seems like I should, you know, do more with it. But yeah, the internet and me just haven't figured things out yet. We're you know.
No, this is awesome. I just love the travelogues in it and stuff like that.
The travelogues were fun to
cool
do.
Stuff.
And yeah, you know, and it's like we get artists that we like to contribute and we get to pay everybody a little money. And that's, you know, it's a good.
That's awesome.
It's a good little ecosystem we have going on over there.
Mm-hmm. So the third issue's theme sounds a little broad, cooks and chefs.
Yeah, it's like, it's a catch-all. But no, I mean, we. You know, Dave is like super pessimistic, like cooking's dying. So that was like his big thing. You know, like, yeah, like cooking is over. Like, you know, there's nothing left.
Oh, like the foodie bubble is like going
away? No, just cooking
or?
In general is dead. Right. I know.
At a time when food is the most popular it's ever been in pop culture?
So that was like, that was kind of a starting point of, you know, of engaging like Mario on that topic. Mm-hmm. And I went up and... talked to the Joe Beef guys in Montreal and just let the issue be a platform for chefs to talk about their profession. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we kind of approached it that way. And Dave's essay in there is super bleak, but Mario's is, you know, and like Tom Colicchio in it is like, he's in Dave's essay and he's like, you got to be less hard on yourself, dude.
I personally would love to see this one because
it's going
to
come out.
Yeah, but I mean, cooking and home cooking, it's very
right, and that's the thing. This is restaurant cooking, and that's mm-hmm. you know, and that's something. And we have fewer recipes in this issue than we did in the first two. So I think for the next issue, we're going to focus more on actionable, real recipes that people can.
Yeah, that was fun. I like how there was a mistake in the first issue.
Oh, man,
the noodles.
Yeah, it's terrible because it was a really great recipe, and when we got it to like. You know, when I was making it at home, I was so stoked. I'm like, oh man, you can make ramen noodles at home. This is great. And then it came out with like
a misprint in the ingredients.
Yeah, T for tablespoon over lowercase T for.
I think you guys meet up for it with that little cartoon illustrating what goes wrong.
Yeah, I felt enough self flogging there. You know.
And what is the editorial pitching process on this? Because this is all.
I know it looks like you.
I mean, it all seems sort of just like, well, we're just going to write about this.
Ruth Reichel, Anthony Bourdain, Mario Batali.
Yeah, Ruth was that was amazing that she came in and did it. And I mean, generally, Dave and I will come up with a topic and come up with some. Like kind of themes that maybe we want to get explored, and then we assign from there. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's really where it goes. Some of the stuff we for the first issue, especially, was sourced from the travels that we'd done for mm-hmm. this television program. But now, you know, and now there's more that people know about it. So through McSweeney's, we're getting put in touch with people who write for them. So now getting essays that way. So it's kind of an evolving thing.
But awesome. Well, maybe I have a chance.
Yeah.
So what else are you working on besides Lucky Peach these days?
Lucky
New cookbooks?
Lucky Peach is kind of eating my life alive. Making a 176-page magazine every 4 months, it turns out to be a horrible idea. When you have... I mean, there's Chris and Rachel are the two editors at McSweeney's who work on it, and two designers, and that's the whole basic staff. So so that's right. Kind of eaten my life alive. But there, you know, I have ideas for books that I have no time to pursue. But I'm hoping we can tame this beast a little bit. Get it, you know, because right now it's still kind of all hands on deck all the time. But
Are you still doing much traveling overseas, like faraway lands?
No, we did a bunch of that for that first issue, but since then I have not. And you know, and I have a little baby who's 2 years old, and so leaving is like, you know, it's like, do I want to go and bro down in this country with you for a week, or do I want to hang out at home with my daughter? And she's, you know, I don't know, she'll be like 13 and she'll hate me soon enough. Yeah. So
then you'll be like, daddy is gone. He's out of here.
But yeah, no, most of the travel is just to go out to San Francisco and work with the guys to put the issue together.
Cool.
You could be in worse places.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know.
Peter, what do you like to cook at home? Best meal for a date?
God, for a date. I've been in a relationship. No, we got married a month ago.
Yeah.
So I've been in a relationship for 17 years, 18 years now. So dates are so far in the past, I don't even know what would happen on them. But we cook. I mean, I don't really eat out in restaurants much at all anymore. It's kind of a recovering restaurant critic thing. But, you know, between having a kid, so you have to pay, you know, $80 to a babysitter if you want to go out for the night, you know, put that on top of a meal. So we cook at home constantly. I mean, just, you know, and that was really where my love of cooking came from, was cooking out of cookbooks and learning about food that way. So getting to cook at home is better for me than going to new restaurants all the time.
Sweet. Anything that you're particularly rocking out on the stove right now?
I'm trying to think. No, I mean, it's a pretty...
Baby food?
No, she's a pretty good eater. There's a lot of pasta going on because she likes that and it's cheap and easy. But, you know, like Marcella Hazan recipes, there's a bunch of recipes that I wrote with Dave years ago for the Momofuku cookbook that are still, like, there's a spicy rice cakes dish that they have at Sambar. But I've just turned that into, like, you can put any protein in that sauce and put it on any starch. So, you know, that's like...
That sounds great.
Yeah, a rotation favorite.
Where do you get your rice cakes, those Korean things?
I had M2M on 2nd Avenue or up at Honorium on 32nd Street.
Nice.
And then burgers. There's like a burger thing in our household for sure.
Going on.
Yeah. You know, Martin's potato rolls. And then I've got this Japanese butcher around the corner from my house, so...
Yeah,
I can't afford any of their real beef, but their ground beef is cheap. So.
Yeah, but that's, you know, if you're getting quality to start, you just get what
they
you
wear
get.
Ties, they grind it fresh for you.
They wear ties?
Yeah, and then you give them $3. It's a, you know, and they, you know, there's the whole Japanese card passing ritual. It's, you know, so I don't know. I don't know if there's any, like, epic home meal creations going on.
Anything you're making, planning on doing for Valentine's Day? I know it's a little while ahead.
God, no, but that's an excellent reminder to do something. I like going to Prune on Valentine's Day. Have you ever been to Prune on Valentine's Day?
I did a few years ago. We got like the 6 p.m. seating followed up by going to see that new Rambo movie.
Wow.
I picked the restaurant. That's the weird thing. But no, they have a really great tasting menu, and it's very...
There's like a poetic, like, you know, it's like bitter lettuces with broken vinaigrette and grilled hearts. And like,
yeah.
There's
and
just like...
Narrow, and it's just... It's, yeah. It's very, yeah, it's very
adorable
carnal.
Adorable restaurant. Yeah. Oh, carnal. Oh, okay. That's what...
I mean, there's some... You go in there, and you're like, okay. Gets you in the mood.
Yeah.
And then you go see Rambo.
To go see Rambo.
It was hands down, if you want to talk about the weirdest Valentine's Day I've ever had.
How was that new Rambo movie?
I've never seen... I mean, I've seen action films. It was the most violent... Like, and violent to the point where... You know, because action movies are sort... You know, the guy gets shot and they fall back. This was, like, heads exploding and people's throats getting ripped out. The girl I was with was totally into it. I was sitting there, I was like, what have I gotten myself into? Needless to say, it didn't last.
Oh.
Oh.
I know.
Anyway.
And she was a vegetarian. Yeah, exactly.
Heavy duty. What about you, Valentine's Day?
Valentine's, I don't know. I probably will, I don't know. I'll have to think of something.
I'm taking my girlfriend to Issa.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's a beautiful restaurant.
If you haven't been there yet, people listening, Issa is just South Second and Wythe. They're doing amazing stuff.
Yeah, I went to like an early party that they had going on, and the food coming out of the kitchen was great, but I haven't been back for
it's gotten even. Because I went early on, and I was like, just they need a little time. And I've been back since, and they're doing phenomenal things. It'll be one of those things where once people find out about them and they get some inevitable Times review, it's going to be just waits. But they're nice. They're really nice people.
One last question. Peter, how do you get inspiration for the next project or art? I know you have your feet pretty deep into Lucky Peach right now. But before, when you were sort of just, a freelance writer, what did you, take walks around the city? Was there anything that you did to just kind of stumble or, find your next gem to write about ideas?
When I was doing the 25 and under thing, that was a lot of like, let's go to a train stop I've never been to before and walk around and see if anything doesn't look disgusting. but I feel like it's so strange, but there are stories that I've wanted to write for years that I've never taken the time to pursue. So I just feel like I have this backlog of things that I've wanted to do. And like that was like the Joe Beef thing in this new issue. I had written about those guys once for the travel section years ago, but in the intervening years, I've got to know them very well. So it was like, I want to go back and do something that's more, instead of it being like a outside person looking in on Joe Beef, now that I know those guys, like go and get in there and get a chance to write that. I don't know if you've seen their cookbook that came out.
Yes, it's
but I think they did an amazing job on that. So, I mean, like I've wanted to write a book about sea urchins since like for like 5 years now. And I have like a huge thing of research on it and, have taken no time for it. But like, I don't know, like when I'm 40, like I'll get around to doing that. So
that's awesome.
I feel like I'm clearing out backlogs of old ideas more than out looking for new things. But then I feel guilty about that. But then I have a baby and I feel like I'm old. No. So.
But if you're a trendsetter, then your ideas just seem current.
I don't know about setting any trends, but we get to do what we want to do. And that's like the most fun you can have writing.
Definitely. And I think that your ideas will only percolate and become perhaps a return better over time.
Or I'll have enough foresight or hindsight at that time to not do them because they're not as good as I thought they were.
Well, maybe that's all for the better too. Really, really stunning stuff here.
Yes,
Lucky Peach.
Thank you for having me on. I'm sorry I was late.
I'm sorry I told you 1:30. Your cookbooks are just so channel the voices of the people involved. We had Peter on like a year ago. We were talking about when the Frankie's cookbook just came out.
So. Yeah.
Like very,
love it.
Yeah.
On the shelf. Go to.
Totally crazy how do you just capture them?
I probably need to graduate from writing in other people's voices to writing in my own.
Yes,
but
please.
But I feel like,
urchin.
There's time,
Okay, there's time.
I hope.
Is it urchin?
That's an excellent show ending pun there.
All right. Thanks again, Peter. Thanks, Darren.
No problem.
We'll listen to him next on Snacky Tunes. And thanks, everyone at Heritage, Jack and Carlos. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi. I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.